Shayok working on Bienemy. Shayok steps back. Tough three-pointer. And Shayok buries it.
Well, the Big 12 race tightening up a little bit more last night. Iowa State wins at Oklahoma 75-74. And I was watching that game, and that was a big-time shot by Shayok, the transfer from Virginia, because it was well guarded by Bienemy, the freshman who is related. His uncle is Eric Bienemy, who is the offensive coordinator of the Chiefs. And Oklahoma nearly pulled off the upset last night at home. Not a lot of people there at the game supporting the Sooner basketball program, who just a few weeks ago was ranked. So yeah. Apparently, you know, basketball, not important to the folks down in Norman. All about football, kind of like up in Nebraska.
They're not winning. They're not there.
And they're not there. Basketball. And they're 15-7, but they're 3-6 in conference play. And they were ranked as of a couple weeks ago. But people, lots of empty seats there. So it really wasn't any kind of home court advantage. They'll probably pack the place, and they'll be – well, it'll be, they'll pack the place when KU goes there, because KU will have about 2,500 people or more that'll be there for the ball game. But the important thing for Iowa State is they won. And so now they are right there, right behind Baylor and Kansas State. They're 7-3, KU 6-3. And, of course, the big showdown coming up tonight between KU and K-State. And we'll preview that with Riley Gates, and Dustin will talk about it as well. Coming up in just a little bit, we'll hear from Bill Self. We'll hear from Bruce Weber on the game tonight. But first, local sports information. We have a new NCKSSports.com Cunningham Telephone Cable Athlete of the Week.
Yes, Brady Pollen, St. John's Jr., the NCKSSports.com Cunningham Telephone and Cable Athlete of the Week. And he had a career week for St. John's Tipton last week on the boys' side. Two games, he averaged 26 points, 9 rebounds, and in those two games combined, shot 83% from the floor, 25 of 30. Just an outstanding week for him. On Tuesday, in a 62-41 win over Thunder Ridge, a career-high 27 points, was 13 of 14 from the floor, and had a double-double with 10 rebounds. And then in a 53-34 win over Wilson and Tipton on Friday, he scored 25 points on 12 of 16 shooting, had 8 rebounds. Now for the season, averaging 13.5 points, 8.5 rebounds, and 2 block shots a game for the 11-3 Blue Jays. So again, Brady Paul in the NCKSports.com Athlete of the Week. And Brady and the Blue Jays will be playing tonight. You can hear the game on Katy Country 94. Girls and boys doubleheader tonight. Lakeside at St. John's Tipton is our matchup. Pregame for the girls contest around 5:50 this evening. Tip off at 6 o'clock. The boys game to follow. Again, that's on Katy Country 94 and katycountry94.com tonight. St. John's Catholic High School in Beloit. So we're looking forward to that here this evening. Also, remind everybody, online video stream at nckssports.com has the Beloit Trojans at the Southeast of Saline Trojans in NCAA League action here this evening. So don't miss that either. Girls varsity action starting at 6 o'clock tonight from Rural Gypsum between the two Trojan teams. So that's what's coming up here as far as listening and watching tonight on our stations and on the web. Also tonight, Pike Valley at Osborne, Lincoln at Southern Clouds, Sylvan Lucas at Chase. Thunder Ridge is hosting Franklin, Nebraska, and Smith Center at Logan. Then also the Rock Hills boys taking on Natoma at home tonight in Northern Plains League action. So look at what's going on in high school hoops coming up this evening.
All right, what stands out on the docket here tonight for you?
Yeah, obviously Lakeside St. John's Tipton is always interesting, and the Lakeside girls are looking for a win over St. John's Tipton for the first time under Travis Everly still, and they've started to improve. They've won 6 of their last 8, so really looking forward to seeing how this one goes. St. John's Tipton usually seems like they up their game when they play Lakeside, so we'll find out in that girls' game. Lady Jays are 11-2 and 5-1, Lakeside 8-7, 4-2 in the league. So that's kind of one that we're keeping an eye on. And then the Lakeside boys against St. John's Tipton as well will be a game that clearly that St. John's Tipton is favored in. Their 3 losses this year, they're 11-3, as I mentioned when I was talking about Athlete of the Week there, Brady. All 3 losses have been to Osborne, so nobody else has been able to beat St. John's Tipton this season. They've had a really good season, and if Lakeside can play a slow-it-down type of game that they want to play, they can be in there with St. John's Tipton tonight, but that'll be the key for them here this evening. St. John's Tipton won both of the games, girls and boys, earlier this year at the preseason tournament, but obviously that's been quite a while since that happened. The rest of these games really tonight should be kind of – there's favorites and there's not favorites. There's nothing really that stands out as far as a marquee game other than the St. John's Tipton and Lakeside that I'm looking at from the Northern Plains League side of things anyway here this evening.
The Beloit Southeast Sling games will be interesting because Southeast Sling girls beat Beloit earlier in the year in Beloit, and if Beloit wants to win a league title for the 5th year in a row, they probably need to win that win at Southeast Saline. And the Beloit boys, even though they've beaten Southeast twice this year, once by 30, but the last time it was 8. It was a tough game at Sterling. Beloit boys seem to have some issues down at Southeast, whether it's close games when they shouldn't or games where they just don't shoot the ball well. So I think that's a bit of a scary game for the Beloit boys. I think they have to bring it third time you place a team. And Southeast getting better. They were only down 2 at halftime against Chapman, and Chapman's a team that beat Beloit earlier this year. So I think Beloit boys got to be on upset alert down there in Gypsum at Southeast tonight. And Beloit Southeast, that should be a good doubleheader. And you can watch it live video stream at nckssports.com via the Beloit Trojan channel. All right, so tonight it's a big deal. It's KU and K-State, and this one's a little bit more important than recent games, and that's because it's a chance for first place in the Big 12. Here's Bill Self on the stakes going into the game in Manhattan, where KU, well, it's their home away from home.
The thing that makes it as tough as possible is that the stakes are high. You know, if they are successful, you can make a case. If they kind of, you know, put themselves in a position maybe better than anybody else to win the league. And you know, if we go over there and we're able to take care of business, then we would push ourselves in a decent position.
Bruce Weber says, need to have the right focus going in, as the seniors of K-State have never beaten Kansas. KU's won 8 in a row against K-State.
Well, I think just for the guys, you got to be mentally ready to play. You can't just think because you're playing at home you're going to, you know, be able to win the game. It the last 2 years, it didn't happen. And that's my big thing, to come, you know, be prepared. Got to be who we are and make sure we're good at it. We got to, you know, it's executing on offense, it's executing on defense, the things that we do well. And then you got to do it, you know, for 40 minutes because they'll keep coming at you.
Well, team shot lights out last time out. Kansas at home, 13 made three-pointers against Texas Tech in that route. And K-State route Oklahoma State and Stillwater made 16 threes, which means tonight both teams will go 1 of 20 from three-point land, and it'll be 52-51. And I don't know who the winner will be. Bruce Weber was asked about zone offense. K-State's had some issues with that. Bruce was a little fired up about that yesterday.
Ironic thing, you guys watch basketball all the time. Do you think we never do zone offense all year? You know, that's the thing. I mean, I just kind of ingest. We run zone offense from the first day of practice. So, you know, I just kind of laugh at, you know, you guys take quotes and you just go and go and go. You know, it's just, now, did we execute very well? No, we did not execute very well. And, you know, had they played any zone? No, they hadn't played any zone. You know, so we just didn't do a good job of going against it. It's something, you know, it's whether it's Texas A&M or Tulsa or whatever, but then there's other games we carve up zones.
Yeah, that's the thing I've said. I mean, I know basketball enough to know they practice it. I mean, we talk about how they don't do well against zones. It's not that K-State doesn't practice it. I'll bet you they practice it a lot, and especially when they're going up against a team that's going to play zone. Now, last year, they were a little bit surprised when KU, you know, threw out a zone at them, but they still should be able to handle it because they practice zone offense from day one, as he mentioned. And, you know, listen, teams at every level, they practice against zone, and they have sets against zone. Trust me, I know. You have sets against zones. You have sets against man-to-man. And you work on moving the ball against a 1-3-1 trap. You work against a full-court press. You work against a 2-3, a 3-2, a 1-3-1, man-to-man. They do that. It's just that K-State's not very good at executing whatever they're coaching, apparently. And, of course, it helps when you make shots. And I would be shocked tonight if Kansas doesn't play at least a few possessions of zone, unless their man-to-man is good enough, and K-State can't score, then there's no need to go to zone because KU's forte is playing man-to-man, and, of course, that's what K-State likes to do as well. But, listen, when you look at this matchup, it's been one-sided, of course. Kansas is 26-4 all-time at Bramlage, which is just still insane. That's crazy. And you look at the coaching records of these two coaches against one another, and you know, Bruce Weber, he is 2-14 all time against KU, and the only time he won it against KU was in Bramlage. 2-4 at Bramlage. Bill Self all time against K-State is 28-5.
Yes,
that's just flat out amazing. 11-4 on the road at K-State. So you know Marcus Garrett will not play tonight. That's certainly a loss for Kansas defensively, although it might help them offensively. Kansas has won 8 in a row. They lead the series in Manhattan 78-47. They lead all-time series 196-93. It's been pretty one-sided, especially since 1988, as we've talked about, when KU beat K-State in the Elite Eight to make it to the Final Four in Kemper in Kansas City. And, of course, KU won with Danny in the Miracles. And Bruce Weber, all-time against Bill Self, is 3-15. But he's 3-4 on his home floor against Bill Self. So there's hope there. That's why most K-State fans say, listen, if we're going to beat Kansas, it's got to be now because we're not going to win in Lawrence. Although at some point, you're going to break that streak. It's going to happen. You're going to win in Lawrence, probably when you least expect it, like Jim Woldridge when K-State went in there. Nobody gave them a chance, and you know what? So anything is possible. But when you look at K-State and when they beat in KU a couple of those times is when they had somebody going nuts. You know, you had Jacob Pullen scoring 38. I mean, something crazy seems to happen if K-State's going to win. It takes an anomaly for K-State to beat KU, even on their home floor. And I don't know if it's going to take that tonight. I don't think Barry Brown has to score 30 for K-State to win. I don't think Dean Wade's got to score 30 for K-State to win. I do think it's going to be very interesting to see the officiating crew and how they're going to call this game tonight. Because if they let them play, I think this game's going to be in the 50s.
Yeah.
And I think K-State, I think that's an advantage to K-State.
Oh, without question.
If the officials call it tight, then I think that's you know, it just depends on who gets in foul trouble, of course. But K-State doesn't have as much depth as Kansas does, although Kansas doesn't really use their depth. And they don't have no Marcus Garrett, no Udo Kazabuke. DeSosa ineligible for the rest of this year and next year, although they play without him all year long. So I'll be fascinated by the matchup tonight. I heard Fran Franchella say last night during the West Virginia-Texas Tech game, which Texas Tech just absolutely blew out West Virginia. West Virginia can't score, and Tech isn't great at scoring, and they still won by a ton. But he said K-State must win tonight. He said K-State must win tonight if Kansas is going to be knocked off of the Big 12 perch.
Oh, I agree with that.
Yeah, he says they must win. If K-State doesn't win, then it's going to be back to, okay, everything's back in order. KU, even though they would be still a little bit behind Baylor by half a game, although Baylor's, I don't got to look up the schedule. I'm guessing they play tomorrow night. To me, it's not a must win for K-State against Kansas for somebody else in the Big 12 to win the Big 12 over Kansas, but it is must win for K-State.
If K-State wants to do
right.
it. Yeah, exactly.
If they want to be the team that knocks off KU from the perch, this is probably a must win tonight.
Yeah, and I mean, it's...
Especially when you can't win in Lawrence.
You're only talking about, for K-State, the halfway point of their conference schedule here tonight, but... It is. I completely agree with that. If K-State wants to be the team that does it, first of all, you got to win at home no matter what. And so they've already lost to Texas at home here. So they need to figure out a way to get that back as the season goes along. And tonight would be that perfect way to get that back. And also, you're beating a team that's fighting with you for that championship. So or to be at the top of the standings here at the end of the season. So I completely agree with that. This is a must-win for K-State, but, yeah, obviously it's not a must-win for Iowa State that K-State beats KU.
Right.
You know, Iowa State can still win this deal even if K-State loses to KU tonight.
Right.
I mean, because that would actually that would put them in a tie with Kansas and what would be a half game behind Baylor in second place right now. So, yeah, I mean, for the other teams, no, but for K-State, for sure.
Listen, if KU beats K-State tonight, KU goes 7-3. K-State be 6-3. Iowa State 7-3. Baylor loses at Texas tomorrow night, which I would say is possible. Baylor would be 6-3. You'd have four games all within half a game, and then you got Texas a game back. So, I mean, this is a logjam, and this is a chance for K-State to get a little bit of separation versus like the likes of Kansas and Texas Tech. Now, they're not going to get a separation from Baylor if Baylor wins tomorrow night against Texas, and they're not going to get separation for Iowa State. But it's a big game for Kansas State, and the seniors have never beaten Kansas. And if they're going to get it done, more than likely it has to be tonight.
Yes. And listen, when they go to Lawrence, the last 2 years have been so close, and it feels like this year is going to be that year that KU just
blows them out.
Says, no, not happening this year.
Could be.
Even with what they're dealing with right now, I just feel like this year's – So, yeah, I agree. You got to get it done tonight in Manhattan.
There's a lot of talk around Lawrence, and it's been written on KUSports.com that the whole Silvio DeSosa situation, where he's been unfairly ineligible for not only this year but all of next year, has galvanized the Kansas basketball team. And they did rally, and boy, they looked good against Texas Tech.
Yeah,
and that was their best game of the year, in my opinion. Of course, it helps you make 13 threes. But if that is the turning point for Kansas, then K-State's in trouble tonight. I mean, if KU plays like they did the other day, K-State's in some trouble because I don't think K-State can outscore Kansas. If it gets into the upper 60s and 70s, I don't see K-State winning. KU defensively is better than they were a year ago. They're not as good offensively, but there is no Marcus Garrett. And that obviously should help K-State tonight. But then you put somebody else in like a Charlie Moore. Okay, he's not as good defensively, but now you got another shooter you got to respect. Whereas with Garrett, you could lay off of him. So yeah. There's a pro and a con to having Garrett on the floor for both teams, or not on the floor for both teams tonight. Top 25 poll is out. Tennessee, number one for the third straight week. Duke is two. Virginia, three. Duke is at Virginia this Saturday. Gonzaga, four. Kentucky has gone all the way up to five. Nevada, six. Michigan, seven. North Carolina, eight. Michigan State, nine. Marquette, 10. Virginia Tech, 11. Houston, 12. And Kansas, the only Big 12 team. They're the highest-rated Big 12 team at 13. And Texas Tech is 18. Iowa State, 17. So just three teams in the top 25. K-State did not make the top 25 poll, but if they win both their games this week, I would think they will move into the top 25.
We've said that before.
Yes, exactly.
If they would win both games, they'll be in the top 25.
That's
and
right.
Lose to Texas A&M.
And they lose one of those games. I saw the KBCA rankings. How does Phillipsburg jump Beloit? See, this is where the rankings are a waste of time. The high school rankings, even the college rankings, are a waste of time, too, let's be honest, because you're going to seed it, and you don't seed it based on your rankings. We saw that one year Gonzaga was number six in the country, got a sixth seed, okay?
Yeah.
So the rankings are just nice for publicity and for ESPN and Fox and all these networks to push, you know, number 10 versus number 7, number 1 versus number 2. But the college, the high school basketball rankings, whoever's doing those, not doing their homework at all. I mean, listen, I don't care. It's not a big deal if Beloit's ranked higher in Phillipsburg at the end of the year because they're not going to be the same substate.
Yeah.
And they win their substates. They may play each other at state. But if somebody's going to, if you want to have the polls really mean something in high school basketball and college too, the people voting need to at least do a little bit of homework. Beloit, they were ranked fourth. They didn't lose since they were last ranked.
Yeah.
Their only loss was Chapman, who's been ranked in and out in 4A this year. They beat Phillipsburg at home. They beat Phillipsburg head-to-head. Phillipsburg went from 6-3. Who did Phillipsburg beat to jump them three spots? What unbelievable
schedule,
team
honestly,
did Phillipsburg
it
beat?
It couldn't have been very – like the boys' mid-continent league is not
it's
anything
not,
like the girls.
It's
like,
not, yeah.
It's not.
Yeah.
So I don't know what.
So how does Phillipsburg move up from 6-3? Yeah, here's how big of a joke the KBCA rankings are. And listen, it's okay. It's fun for the kids to look and say, hey, yeah, we're ranked or whatever. But don't get all mad or upset and worry about how a team jumped you in the rankings, because you'll decide at the end of the year. That's why I don't like the rankings either, because that causes that. There was one year Beloit started the year. They were ranked. They lost two. They were 0-2, and they moved up in the rankings.
Yeah.
Then they won two in a row and fell out of the rankings.
Yeah.
And it's like, what? What? I remember we had the joke with Coach Ireland about it. Hey, you lost, and you're still in the rankings. You lost. You moved up. Now, wait, watch when you win, you fall out. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
So, listen, if you have Phillipsburg at 6 and Beloit at 4 in your rankings, and Beloit doesn't lose that week, and Beloit beat Phillipsburg, how in the world do you jump Phillipsburg over them? It happens in the top 25 all the time. Like, how do you jump one team over another when they have the same amount of losses and one just beat the other a week ago? How do you possibly put the team that lost to that team ahead of them?
Yeah.
It's just amazing to me. Doesn't make much sense.
That's what's amazing to me is like Beloit's been ahead of Phillipsburg the whole
all
time.
Year. Yeah.
And all of a sudden this week.
Did Phillipsburg beat Bishop Miege or something?
Yeah,
I missed that.
Like, who did?
Just
like,
checking.
It's not that hard to figure out. Like,
no.
Beloit should be 3 if you're going to do it like that.
Yeah, Phillipsburg 4. Be pretty easy. Not that it really matters too much.
No,
though.
It doesn't. I mean, I've seen it all year. I mean, when you look at 1A
Osborne boys,
Osborne is not any worse than 5th in 1A. I can promise you that.
Yeah, and they're ranked 9th.
They're up to 8th.
Oh, my.
Week.
They moved
gave
up
an
spot.
Extra spot.
All right. Great. I would say St. John's Tipton boys should be considered. All their losses are tied.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But
people
they're,
don't
they're
know
not
that.
Looking at They're
people
looking at the three losses. They don't know who they
are. They have no idea who they lost to. That's exactly right. All right. Baseball free agency. It's, you know, once again, slow.
Yeah.
We're a few weeks away from spring training, guys. Pitchers and catchers report here very soon. Manny Machado doesn't have a team. Bryce Harper does not have a team.
Yeah.
Peter Moreland, and the same, of course, Machado. When you think superstars, free agents, you think Machado, you think Harper, and then Peter Moreland. And Peter Moreland is available as well. The Mets signed a guy who was kicked out of baseball and suspended for his career, and then they appealed and whatever, and he had a 2-year suspension. He got signed before Peter Moreland, who had a great year last year. Peter Moreland put on Twitter, a guy that was kicked out of baseball gets signed before I do? What's wrong with this picture?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So Machado still looking. It just shows that teams don't want to spend as much money as they
changing,
once did.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I still could see Machado with the Yankees, although that's what Machado was hoping for. But He might just have signed a 1-year deal for like $30 million. You know, but Harper, yeah. I think, will get a big deal somewhere eventually.
Moose is still sitting around, too.
Yeah, Moose is available.
Like, he ain't on the team.
There's word that the Padres are interested in Machado, and then they said that's too much, and now Hosmer's lobbying for Moose to rejoin Haas in San Diego.
Yeah.
Which would be all right, probably. I don't know how much Moose will get. Moose probably get another 1-year deal.
Yeah, I mean,
isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
That free agency baseball.
2 years in a row, he's just sitting here hanging around. Like,
it's nuts. Absolutely nuts.
And it's not like he's not a serviceable
No.
More than serviceable third baseman, you know?
Solid player. Good defensive player. A good left-handed bat with power. All right, Dusty, I actually don't know who placed this bet, so I'm going to ask you. Did you bet $250 on the Rams to score exactly 3 points in Super Bowl 53?
No, I wouldn't. Well, that's too bad. I wouldn't bet on any team to score exactly 3 points in a Super Bowl.
Well, if the odds are 400-1, I bet you if I was in Vegas, I would have. If I saw that, I would have put $10 on it.
Oh, yeah.
And then I would have won.
If you're just looking through and see, hey, this might be interesting.
Yeah, it's like $10, big deal, or $5, you know? Big deal to some. Some people can't afford to just throw $10 away. I get that. One person bet $250 on the Rams to score exactly 3 points in Super Bowl 53. The odds were 400-1. They turned a $250 bet into a $100,000 win.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good return on investment.
It is.
I don't know if that person's a Patriot fan or not, but they probably should thank the Patriots.
Yeah, definitely. Man. They are now.
Yeah. Can you imagine how they were sweating that, though, when Goff and the Rams were driving and then they threw that pick? On a cover zero.
Well, what about Zerline misses the field goal?
Well, that's right. That's right. And it really was an immaterial field goal because there was 8 seconds left in the game. It was 13-3, and he's a really good kicker. You're right. That person had to be sweating. They might be in the hospital right now because they almost had a heart attack. Like, oh, seriously? An immaterial, doesn't even matter, field goal in the final seconds of the Super Bowl. And that's going to cost me, $100,000. You're right.
That's basically that game's version of a backdoor cover right there.
Absolutely. Yeah. So there's a guy I should send a thank you note to the kicker, Zerline, for missing the field goal. Because if he makes that, this guy doesn't win $100,000. He loses $250,000. That's why I don't wager on things like this. Because I would be just, congratulations, $100,000. Where is he? Oh, he's in the emergency room. I don't know if he's going to make it because all the stress. Don't make the field goal. Why do you care? It's the Rams, man. It's the Patriots. I thought you didn't care about the Rams or the Patriots. I don't. I care about my money. Zerline, miss it. Why do you want to miss it? I got $100,000 riding on this thing. You put $100,000. No, I put $250 back and won $100,000. Really? Well. Who can we ask about for a loan? And then all your buddies are probably like, miss it, because hey, I might get a loan from this guy.
Yeah.
$250 wager, won him $100,000. So the Rams' futility paid off for someone.
It did.